Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Previously in Deathstalker Legacy.
So, what sweet and sour miracle can I perform for you, Sir Durandal?
The Esper drug.
You're not planning to take it yourself, are you?
Oh no. I have no intention of taking it myself.
Finrother thought he was going to be chosen as champion. In fact, he set his heart on it. He took it very hard when Douglas named me instead. As a result, Finn isn't as focused on his work as he once was.
I would have died for you, Douglas. And now, I'll dance on your grave.
Relax, Brad. I'm not going to kill you. I have to make some other use for you. And that's where the Esper drug comes in.
That was different.
Telepathy. What did it feel like?
Shut up.
Jess. We can't do this. We can't. Douglas is my friend.
Hell, he's my fiancé. I'm going to marry him.
Welcome to Logros, Emma. Your reputation precedes you.
Any crime or injustice is my business.
You're going to be very busy.
Stop the riot. Do whatever you have to, whatever it takes, but stop the killing.
We can't use espers against humans!
Just shut up! You had your chance and you did nothing but squabble and bicker while good men and women died. I'm going to see what's happened to my friend Lewis. You can send someone later to tell me if I'm still king.
You can't leave. This house is still in session. We haven't dismissed you yet.
God damn you all to hell.
All of you together aren't worth one of the paragons who fell defending you.
Oh, God. I thought I'd lost you. I saw them shoot you. And it was as though someone had shot me, too.
Don't know what to do. I've never felt like this before.
Never? Haven't you ever been in love before?
Do you love him?
Yes. No. I don't know. It's complicated.
Anne, what are you doing here?
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Legacy. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Michael Glenn, Vanessa Benjamin, David Coyne, Sonny Lasky, Corey James, Colleen Delaney, Dylan Lynch, Jeff Baker, Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Michael Raplogle, Karen Carbone, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. Directed and adapted for Graphic Audio by Richard Rowan. Episode 4, Questionable Choices.
Bloody hell.
Emma Steele, Logris's latest paragon, defender of the meek and avenger of the wronged, stood impatiently on the roof of her new apartment building in the early hours of the morning, her thick purple cloak flapping noisily about her in the gusting wind. She was waiting for Finn Durandal to show up. She'd been waiting for almost an hour, and was not in the best of moods. It was bad enough that Finn had been openly giving her the runaround for the past few days, before finally agreeing to at least take her on a tour of Logris's main city, but now it seemed he couldn't even be bothered to show up at the time he'd insisted on. Emma, who was never late for anything, took Finn's absence as a personal insult. She'd moved past outrage and planned insults, and was currently debating which side of the roof it would be most fun to push him off. No one slighted Emma Steele and got away with it. She fumed quietly, arms crossed tightly over her armored chest, one foot tapping ominously. It didn't help that she was pretty damn sure that the Durandal had only agreed to this meeting because the media had been asking, in increasingly mystified tones, as to why Finn hadn't joined up with his new partner yet. particularly after they'd made such a good showing working together during the Neumann riots. Emma's mouth tightened even more as she considered that thought. There was a lot about the riot that bothered Emma Steele. To start with, the sheer viciousness of the violence had shocked her rigid. Emma was used to violence. She'd grown up on Mistworld, after all, where assault and battery was a daily occurrence. But civilians turning on Paragons? Killing Paragons, their own beloved defenders, in what was supposed to be the most civilized city on the most civilized world in the Empire? If you couldn't trust the people of Logris to behave in a sane and civilized manner, then you couldn't rely on anything anymore. Perhaps not even the legendary Finn Jirandal. Emma's frown deepened into a scowl. In those confused moments when she'd cut and hacked her way through the furious crowd to fight at Finn's side, surely she couldn't have seen what she thought she'd seen. The great and legendary hero Finn Jirandal only going through the motions, only pretending to duel with the armed men before him. Certainly when she joined him, she'd seen him cut down the rioters with great skill and efficiency, showing not a trace of indecision or mercy. Emma felt disloyal even considering the thought that the earlier fighting might not have been everything it seemed, but she had to admit that in so many ways, Finn Jirandal, the man, was nothing like the fetid hero whose exploits had inspired her to become Mistworld's first and only Paragon. Coming to Logris had been her greatest ambition. Working beside Finn Jirandal had been her greatest dream. She should have known better. Never meet your heroes. They'll always disappoint you. And ambition was just a conceit that distracted you from getting the job done. Here she was at the pinnacle of her career, and instead of concentrating on her work, rushing out into this city to make it her own and show the local scumbags who was really in charge, she was standing dithering on an empty rooftop, trying to find answers to questions that made no sense. But still, the questions wouldn't leave her alone, nagging at her mind. In some way she didn't understand yet, these questions were important. They mattered. Her gravity sled hovered beside her like a faithful hound, its engine barely ticking over. She glanced at it fondly. It was good to have one old friend with her. One thing she could still depend on. She'd brought the sled with her all the way from Rhiannon, paying the passage herself when the authorities on Logris refused to cover the cost. Bureaucrats. Penny pinchers. Emma had spent years customizing the sled, all but rebuilding it to meet her exactingly high standards, adding extra weapons and shielding, and a whole bunch of mostly legal extra options. It was fast and powerful and full of surprises, and she'd back it against anything the bad guys had to offer. When she finally retired, many years from now, of course, Emma planned to license the sled to the military. She wouldn't be greedy. She wouldn't ask for a fortune, just a percentage. She stood on the very edge of the roof, the tips of her boots actually poking out over the long drop, and looked out over the city. Under the lowering sky, heavy with dark clouds still stained with blood from the newly risen sun, the parade of the Endless stretched away for miles in every direction, thousands of buildings packed tightly together, full of millions of people. Those people were why she was here. They were her responsibility, her duty, her flock. Hers to protect against the wolves and other less obvious predators. She looked out over the great towers and spires and domes, the mile-long bridges, the slender elevated walkways and spiraling roads, and tried to see the great and marvelous city she dreamed of serving for so long. But all she saw was the stupid anger, the dumb, stubborn viciousness in the faces of the rioting crowd. The perfect people of the perfect city had slaughtered Paragons and gloried in it. The wind that blew around her was suddenly bitterly cold and full of omens, and Emma Steele wanted nothing more than to go home, back to familiar sights and familiar villains, and evils she understood. And then, finally, there he was, gliding smoothly through the air towards her on a state-of-the-art gravity sled, standing tall and proud, the cold wind barely ruffling his famous golden curls. The one and only Finn Jirandal. He settled his sled down beside hers and stepped elegantly down to favor her with a formal bow.
Paragon Steel,
Up close, he was every bit as big and handsome and impressive as she could have hoped. But Emma couldn't help noticing that his frank and open smile didn't even touch his eyes. She pushed the thought aside, telling herself she was only seeing what her suspicions wanted her to see, and stepped forward to sweep him into her customary hug. He froze inside her arms, his body becoming stiff and tense and unyielding, and she let him go immediately. She stepped back again, a faint flush of embarrassment darkening her coffee cheeks. Lewis hadn't minded.
Welcome to Logris, Emma Steele. Sorry I haven't been around before, but I've been very busy. Really, you have no idea. Logris is a big planet with a huge population, and with Douglas and Lewis gone, I've been run off my feet. I mean, even I can't be everywhere at once. Still, here we are, together at last. Partners, I've been looking forward to working with you. I'm sure we can learn all sorts of useful things from each other. And it'll be good to have someone to watch my back again. Logris can be a dangerous place for the unprepared. So, climb aboard your sled, Emma, and I'll give you the grand tour. Show you the ropes. Get you started. I'm sure you'll pick it up in no time at all. Crime is crime, after all, and villains are villains wherever you go. And do call me Finn. We don't stand on ceremony around here.
And that was it. The whole welcome speech and introduction, all over in under a minute. Lots of smiles and eye contact, but no real warmth. And no real information either. Just a quick presentation that he'd probably rehearsed in front of a mirror before he came out. Lewis had made her feel welcome, made her feel like a valued partner, even if he did have a tendency to flap a bit about things that didn't really matter. Emma nodded tightly to Finn and turned to her gravity sled. She'd known immediately where she was with Lewis. She wasn't a lot closer to understanding Finn. She followed him out over the city, the two sleds riding high over the already bustling streets, almost up in the clouds. All the other air traffic gave them plenty of room, from the darting messengers on their slipstream boards to the bulky freight carriers too heavy for the roads. Nobody waved or even acknowledged their presence, and no one wanted to get too close. Emma was scowling so hard now her brow had begun to hurt. As a paragon, you expected respect, not fear. Something was very wrong in Logris. And she was pretty sure it all had its base in Finn Durandal. She'd seen all the documentaries, including the drama reconstructions, studied all his major cases, even been a member of his official fan club back when she was just a kid. He'd done amazing things in his time, especially when he partnered Douglas Campbell and Lewis Deathstalker. The Dream Team, the media had called them. Finn had been the ideal she'd modeled her life on. But this cold, casual, almost effete man, with his empty words and emptier smile, was nothing like the legend. Just a man, with muscles and a pretty face, and a few flashy fighting skills. Nothing like the Deathstalker, who never looked anything less than the warrior he was. She had no doubts at all concerning the Deathstalker's conduct during the riot. Where others had seen cruelty, she had seen only passion. Where others had seen killing, she had seen only duty. Lewis had behaved as a paragon should. Finn led her down, out of the clouds and into the city. They swooped down like birds of prey, and all the other traffic scattered to get out of their way as Finn and Emma shot between the tall buildings, rising and falling on the bucking updrafts. The gusting wind had a sharp, biting edge at this speed, buffeting around the edges of the sled's forward foreshield. But once again, it was the sheer scale of the city below that took Emma's breath away. Even at the very beginning of the day, with the last of the dawn still leaking out of the sky, already the streets were thronging with people and traffic, bustling back and forth like ants in a colony. Traffic filled the roads, filtered effortlessly through the baffling maze of streets by the city's central traffic computers. People were on the move, heading out to work or back from the night shifts, in the city that never slept, never paused, never faltered. And all around, almost overwhelming when seen at such close range, towers and edifices shot up into the sky, fashioned like works of art, sparkling with brilliant lights, and more often than not, flashing vivid hollow adverts to the crowds below. The city, endlessly alive, vibrant and alert, stretching away like an endless sea of stone and steel, faceted with shimmering glass and precious metals. The greatest jewel of the Empire. Pride and wonder burst in Emma's heart to be a part of such a city. There was nothing like it on Mistworld or Xanadu. Nothing so intense, so alive and full of purpose. Finn took her lower still, cutting back on his speed now, till they were scudding by barely a dozen feet above the heads of the pedestrians on the main city streets. People looked up to see the two Paragons sail past, and a few of them waved and some of them smiled, but most just stared up coldly, their faces set and grim, as though they were the ones sitting in judgment. Not at all what Emma Steele was used to. She knew she had a hard reputation. She took pride in it. But it had always been her proud boast that only the guilty ever had anything to fear from her. Finn maneuvered his sled close in beside hers.
Don't mind them. They're just confused. They'll get over it.
They look like they hate us, like they can't trust us. Like we're not really Paragons anymore.
Never expect gratitude from those you serve, Emma. We protect them, do their dirty work for them. Even clean up after their messes, but they never appreciate what we do. They don't care that we do a job no one else can do, that we give our lives to it because it needs to be done. They don't want to see the blood and suffering our job entails, because then they'd have to admit that they're part of the problem. If they were all clean-cut, law-abiding citizens, without guilt or secrets or hidden desires, they wouldn't need us, would they?
Emma didn't know what to say to any of that. It was harsh and cynical, and not too far from what she'd often thought herself, but this was Logris, the homeworld of humanity, the heart of civilization. Things were supposed to be different here. And the Girondol's manner was decidedly strange. It was as though he was saying one thing while meaning quite another, and challenging her to sort out the truth. It was almost as though he was playing with her. That impression only strengthened as the tour continued, and it rapidly became clear to Emma that Finn was only going through the motions. He was happy enough to point out famous landmarks and talk vaguely about past cases, but he wasn't providing any of the hard information she needed. Like where the main trouble spots were and how to defuse them. Like who the main bad guys were and where she should look for them. Who was on the way up, who was on the way down. Where you could go and who you could talk to get answers to questions. Simple, straightforward local knowledge that any good peacekeeper needs to know to do the job properly. Finn was talking a lot, but saying nothing. It seemed her first impression of Finn Durandal had been correct after all. There was no fire in him, no passion. Nothing to indicate he gave a damn about doing the job and doing it well. About being a Paragon. Finally, it all got too much for Emma. She surged forward and steered her sled abruptly in front of his, forcing him to a halt. She glared at Finn, and didn't even bother to disguise the anger in her voice.
Is this it? Is this your idea of going on patrol, partner? We just fly around admiring the scenery and wait for an emergency call to come. We can't do anything up here. We need to be down there in the thick of it, down on the streets asking questions and taking names. I checked with dispatch first thing this morning. There are hundreds of open and ongoing situations we could be investigating. And there's no way in hell I'm going to get any sense of how this city operates if you're not going to tell me anything I can use. Why don't you show me the rookery? Lewis said...
Never mind what the Death Stalker said. He isn't a Paragon anymore.
Finn looked at Emma sharply, dropping his calm mask for the first time. On anyone else, it would probably have worked.
You stay clear of the rookery, Emma. You're not ready for that yet. It's a very dangerous place, even for a Paragon. Perhaps especially for a Paragon. For all your impressive reputation, they'd eat you alive.
Emma gave him her best sardonic look.
I thought this was supposed to be the most civilized city on the most civilized world in the Empire. Are you actually telling me there's somewhere on Logris that you're afraid to go?
You only think you know evil because you know Mistworld and Rhiannon. But they're just amateurs compared to Logris. Only the finest of wines can produce the most poisonous dregs. Only the highest of civilizations can produce the most subtle, most terrible evils. The rookery distills evil down to its most vicious concentrations. You wouldn't last 10 minutes. When I think you're ready, when you've proved yourself to me, then I'll take you there. And show you things you never even dreamed of in your worst nightmares, little Miss Country Cousin. Until then, stay out. That's an order.
He broke off as a sudden call came in on the Paragon emergency comm channel.
Attention, attention. We have a code beta situation in Avalon City Starport. There's been an explosion aboard the Starliner, Allison Blue, rupturing the hull right next to its hyperdrive engines. We have a level 9 radiation leakage on the landing pads. Reported casualties, 57 dead and several hundreds mutating. The Hellfire Club has already claimed responsibility. Please, proceed at once to coordinate with local peacekeepers.
Finn looked at Emma with something that might almost have been relief.
Sounds like a bad one, even for the Hellfire Club. I'd better handle it. You fly around the city some more, get a feel for things. Go down onto the streets and talk to people, if that's how you're used to doing things. But keep your guard up, and for God's sake, watch your back. And stay out of the rookery. I don't want to have to write out a report on your death on your first day on the job.
He turned his sled around without waiting for a reply, and sped off for Avalon City. Emma watched him till he was safely out of range, and then headed straight for the rookery, using the coordinates Lewis had given her. There had to be some reason why Finn was so keen to keep her away from Logris's official crime center. Something he didn't want her to see. Something he didn't want her to know. And Emma always wanted to know things other people didn't want her to know. She found the supposed entrance easily enough, a narrow alleyway between two blank-faced, characterless buildings in an area of the city apparently given over almost entirely to storage and warehouses. The buildings were solid stone, with no windows, and steel doors so heavily reinforced you probably couldn't even scratch their paintwork with anything less than a point-blank disruptor bolt. Not that Emma was planning on doing anything like that, of course. Or, not yet, anyway. The warehouses didn't even have an obvious name or designation. Presumably, if you didn't know who they were and what they stored, your custom wasn't needed or welcome. Emma stood at the mouth of the alleyway, looking down it, her gravity sled hovering patiently behind her. The alleyway was dark and shadowy, ostentatiously uninviting. Very much an enter-at-your-own-risk kind of alleyway. Emma looked back over her shoulder. The street was entirely empty. The few people who had been there when she arrived, apparently just going about their ordinary business, were gone now. And even the few windows overlooking the street were conspicuously empty. No one was watching. Whatever was about to happen, no one wanted to know. Emma smiled. She'd come to the right place. When she looked back at the alleyway, she found she was no longer alone. Half a dozen unnaturally large men, with the kind of bulky, distended muscles you could only buy in body shops, had emerged silently from the shadows and were now blocking the entrance to the alley. Four had swords in their hands, one had an axe, and one had an energy gun. The men held these weapons with a casual authority that suggested they knew how to use them. 6-1 odds. Emma's smile widened. It was going to be a good day. The man with the energy gun scowled, confused by her easy attitude. He stepped forward, his gun aimed squarely at her gut.
Where do you think you're going, Paragon?
I'm new in town. Thought I'd see the sights. And everyone says the rookery is the place to go if you're looking for scumbags.
No entry. Off limits. To people in general. And mouthy Paragon bitches in particular. You're new, so we'll make allowances this time. Get back on your sled and go back to your own territory, or we'll teach you a lesson in manners, make you cry, little girl. Make you get down on your knees and beg to be allowed to run off home.
Oh, will you really? I'd like to see you try. I really would. It's been a long time since any overweight thug with muscles between his ears has been able to teach me anything.
She was grinning now. She knew she shouldn't. She knew it was unprofessional. But she just couldn't help herself. The man with the gun looked uncertain for the first time. Whatever reaction he'd been expecting, insolence and good cheer certainly wasn't it. He looked around at his associates to reassure himself, and that was when Emma made her move. The force of the blast punched a hole right through him and blasted him off his feet. He hit the ground hard, already dead, the front of his shirt on fire. Emma was in and among the others while they were still lifting their weapons.
Shit!
She let one live, the one with the axe. She stood before him, carefully out of range, still grinning nastily, not even out of breath. Blood dripped steadily from her blade as the axeman stared at her with wide, frightened eyes. He slowly lowered his axe, as though it had grown too heavy for him to hold. Emma raised her sword slightly. This was going to be easier than she'd thought.
You're alive because I want answers. You'll stay alive as long as you answer truthfully. You even think of lying to me and I'll whittle you down to a more responsible citizen. So, who do you work for? Who told you I was coming? Who told you to frighten me off? And what's going on in the rookery that I'm not supposed to find out about? Talk to me, dammit, or I'll rip out your spleen and make you eat it!
Sometimes her reputation actually got in the way. She holstered her gun, pulled a piece of rag out of her pocket, cleaned her sword, and put it away. Then she cleaned the blood off her hands, dabbed at a few of the larger stains on her uniform, before giving it up as a bad job, and put the piece of rag away. There was no point in going after the thug. He could have disappeared into a dozen different bolt holes by now. And no doubt there were all kinds of nasty surprises and booby traps lying in wait if she was dumb enough to go into the darkness after him. Everything from massed disruptor fire to proximity mines. It was what she would have done. Leave it for another day. Perhaps she could persuade the Deathstalker to provide her with another entrance point. He might even join her. Lewis looked like a man who might be up for a little righteous fun, even if he was the high and mighty champion these days. Certainly he'd make a much better partner than Finn Bloody Durandal. She frowned. She was going to have to look into that. Discover just why the Durandal wasn't the man he used to be. She walked back to her waiting gravity sled and found a small crowd had gathered. They seemed more interested in the dead bodies than in her. She smiled and nodded politely to them, but they just stared coldly back at her. They didn't look like the thugs, just ordinary, everyday people. But their faces were sour and sullen, their eyes angry. They looked like they would have liked to say angry, abusive things to her, if they dared. Emma supposed they were rookery people, or at least rookery supporters. If they weren't, that would mean the general populace's feelings towards the Paragons were even worse than she'd suspected. And she didn't want to believe that. Not yet. Careful not to turn her back on anybody, Emma stepped up onto her sled and soared up into the sky again. She kept on going until she was high enough that the city spread out below her looked once again like the wondrous place it was supposed to be. The current patriarch of the Church of Christ Transcendent, the very Reverend Roland Wentworth, had been demanding an audience with Angelo Bellini, leader of the church militant, ever since the church demonstration turned into a Neumann riot, and Angelo had finally got around to seeing him. They sat facing each other across Angelo's very impressive state-of-the-art computerized desk in Angelo's extremely sumptuous new office. Now that he'd moved up in the world and finally become the very important person he'd always known he should be, Angelo had wasted no time in transferring his base of operations into the biggest office he could find in the great Logris Cathedral. The previous occupant hadn't argued. He could tell which way the wind was blowing.
Nice office, Angelo. Very roomy. A bit overblown for my taste, but then I never was one for the material pleasures.
The new office boasted every luxury that Angelo had been able to think of. Deep pile carpets, veined marble walls, efficient but unobtrusive central heating and air conditioning, and a long shelf packed with all the very best wines from the cathedral's extensive cellars. Life was good. Angelo had denied himself nothing. Why should he? He was now the de facto head of the church, supreme lord over the destiny of billions of souls, and it was about time the patriarch realized it. Well past time that Roland Wentworth realized he was yesterday's man.
I was a monk, you probably know that, before I was called to be a cardinal and then the patriarch. I was happy being a monk. All I ever really wanted. But they told me I was needed, and I always was a sucker for that. So, here I am, and here you are, the patriarch, and, what are you exactly now?
Angelo leaned back in his oversized chair, activated the massage function, and smiled widely upon the patriarch, sitting stiffly upright on his straight-backed, uncomfortable visitor's chair. The patriarch stirred uncomfortably under Angelo's smile and blinked owlishly back at him.
I'm the angel of Madragoda, media saint, spiritual inspiration for the church militant, and lord of all I survey. I'm Angelo Bellini, and the church does what I tell it to. You must have noticed.
Well, yes. I'm not so much ignored these days as bypassed. Important matters are no longer brought to my attention. My directives are lost or misfiled, and no one in the media will take my calls anymore. Half my staff don't even bother to come into work anymore. It's like I become invisible. But I am still the Patriarch Angelo, chosen and anointed leader of the Living Church, the rightly appointed, divinely blessed Lord Spiritual to all the Empire. And I will not be easily put aside or silenced. I have a duty and a responsibility to guide my flock, my church, in the right direction, to save them from evil and, if need be, from themselves. Now, if you want to fight, Angelo, I'm quite prepared to give you one. The church and the church militant are not one and the same for all your efforts. There are still a good many good people ready and willing to support me and the true church.
Only a fool starts a fight he can't hope to win. You have a few well-meaning supporters scattered here and there. I have the Neumann. You have faith and a good heart. I have an army of fanatical supporters ready to fight and die in my merest word. All your precious convictions are no defense against cold steel. Faith won't stop an energy bolt.
You haven't read your Bible recently, have you, Angelo? You see, I'm really very unhappy with the way things have been going recently. I was confused for a while. I saw the church changing and I didn't know why. I thought perhaps it was my fault, that I was out of touch. But the Neumann riot was a mistake. Even I could see that that didn't just happen. It was planned, orchestrated, by you. I freely confess I'm baffled as to why you should want such anarchy and bloodshed. But then I have never understood evil. Only that I must fight it with every weapon at my command.
Your time is past, Wentworth.
Angelo leaned sharply forward in his chair to glare across his desk.
You and all your weak kind have no place in the new church or the empire that's coming. Go home, retire, be a monk again while you still have the choice.
The butterfly cannot go back to being a caterpillar. I was chosen, and unlike you, it seems, I take my religion seriously. I will fight you. Because I must. Even the quietest of souls can become warriors in God's name. We are all capable of becoming more than we are, or think we are. That's the basis of our faith. We can all transcend our lowly beginnings in God's name. What do you believe in, Angelo? Do you believe in anything, apart from yourself?
I believe I'm going to be very rich and very powerful. And I don't care what anyone else believes. None of that shit matters anymore. All that matters now is whether you're for me or against me. Ah, Roland, you have no idea how good it feels to be able to speak openly. To tell the truth after so many years of mouthing pleasant platitudes. Do you know why I was so very good at raising money for charities? Because the more I raised, the more I could skim off at the top to give myself the comfortable life I always knew I deserved. Personally, I think pure humanity are a bunch of mindless thugs, and their so-called policies nothing more than childish xenophobia. But they do make such excellent soldiers. Just wind them up, point them in the right direction, and turn them loose, and then stand well back while they do all the necessary dirty work.
You admit it?
Why not? I'm not telling you anything you don't already know or suspect. And it's not like anyone will ever listen to you. You see, Roland, under you and your sort, the church was never more than a wasted opportunity. No real power, no real influence. Just a few woolly philosophies and a rather tiresome preoccupation with the madness maze. You had the ear of the king, the attention of Parliament, and the respect of the people, but you never did anything with them. You had no fire, no passion, no ambition. I have remade the church in my own image, put some iron in its soul, and already it is a power base to be reckoned with. When I speak, the king listens. Parliament shudders. The people rush to obey. The cry is now, ask not what your church can do for you, but what you can do for your church. It never ceases to amuse me what people will do in the name of religion. They'll hate and fight and kill. They'll do all sorts of violent and nasty things they wouldn't even dream of doing for any other cause. And I will give them the madness maze eventually. God knows how many thousands or even millions of poor deluded fools I'll have to march through the damn thing to find out how it works. But then it's only ever been a short step from fanatic to martyr. And the church has never been short on either.
I'll stop you. I will stop this madness, this evil, whatever it takes.
No, you won't. Your day is over, Roland. Goodbye.
Angelo's hand moved almost casually to a single isolated control on his desk. It was really quite a small transmutation bomb with a strictly defined blast radius. It was very efficient. Sleeting energy slammed up into the Patriarch, ripping him apart at the genetic level. But he never took his eyes off Angelo Bellini. His lower body collapsed in on itself, losing all shape and definition. His lap and waist transformed, slumping from flesh and bone into thick jelly, and then into a viscous pink protoplasmic slime, all in a few moments. His heart still beat, his mouth still worked, though no sound came out of it, and his eyes were horribly aware. Angelo Bellini leaned forward across his desk, studying the Patriarch's slow and awful death with hot, greedy eyes. A few moments later, only the head was left on the chair, and then that too was gone. And all that remained of the Patriarch of the True Church were long, thick strands of pink protoplasmic slime, dripping slowly from the visitor's chair and onto the expensive carpet.
I never liked you, mealy-mouthed little snot. I'll make a much better Patriarch. Now this is a power! I couldn't get it to like this.
Angelo activated the comm panel set into his desk.
Miss Lila, send in the cleaners, would you? I'm afraid my late visitor made something of a mess.
Douglas Campbell, King of the Empire, Speaker to Parliament, and latest of a long line of heroes, pulled on his royal robes and checked his makeup in his dressing room mirror. With so many media cameras covering the House's sessions these days, it was vital that he looked his best. He scowled at his receding hairline, stuck out his tongue, winced at the sight of it, and reluctantly put it away again. He wasn't getting enough sleep these days, and it showed. But the work just kept coming. There was never any end to the paperwork, and he couldn't justify hiring any more assistants. He already had trouble remembering all the names of everyone working for him now. He looked down at the crown, sitting on the table before the mirror, and decided against putting it on just yet. It always gave him a headache. He threw himself into his favorite chair.
Well,
and nodded shortly to Jessamine Flowers, his wife and queen-to-be, sitting elegantly in the chair opposite him. She was wearing a devastatingly elegant gown with casual, silent grace. Her makeup was restrained but perfect, and Douglas just knew that she looked the part far more than he ever would.
You're scowling again, Douglas. Don't, it'll give you lines.
Sorry. I was thinking. Look, we don't have a lot of time. The day's session will begin in under an hour, and Anne's been paging me increasingly urgently ever since I showed up. But I felt it was important we have this little chat. Clear the air, so to speak.
Of course. You first.
We're going to be married. We couldn't stop that now, even if we wished. Too many people want it. It's like a business merger where the stockholders have voted it through, and to hell with what the board wants. It's inevitable now.
Darling, you say the most romantic things. But yes, I understand. The show must go on. I take it the champion won't be attending this session of Parliament?
No. I've decided he's needed urgently elsewhere, and he'll go on being needed urgently elsewhere until after we're safely married.
I've seen the wedding dress. It's really very lovely. Practically a work of art.
Lewis is my best friend.
I'll look every inch a queen. We'll make a lovely couple.
I should never have made him champion. I should never have given up being a paragon. We were happy then. Our lives made sense. Never wanted to be king.
You could abdicate. It's not a prison sentence.
No, I can't. I'm needed.
Then be king, damn it. Do the job and don't look back, just as I'm not going to look back. We're going to be king and queen. Nothing else matters.
Douglas nodded slowly.
I thought we'd have the same choir my father chose for my coronation. They sounded fine.
Bit weak on the descants, and the main tenor isn't nearly as good as he thinks he is. But yes, they'll do. Who's going to be best man? It can't be Lewis now.
No, it can't be Lewis. I thought maybe Finn Durandal. He was my partner for years after all, and it might help to make things up with him for not being chosen as champion.
Yes, the Durandal. Good choice. He'll look good, he always does. And it'll play very well with the media. Maybe I should have Emma Steele as my maid of honour, if we can persuade her to leave the sword and gun behind. Any thoughts as to where we should spend our honeymoon? I hear the sighing mountains on Magellan are very lovely this time of year.
I thought perhaps the Black Lakes on Mali. They've become quite the place to be, and be seen.
Oh, yes, sweetie. Gorgeous scenery and lots of the very best people for us to look down our noses at.
And then they stopped and looked at each other for a long moment. In the 3 days since the Neumann riot and its aftermath in the house infirmary, Douglas and Jessamine had spent a lot of time together, making a great public show of togetherness. But there were still a great many things they hadn't said. Things that needed to be said now. If only, so that they need never be discussed again.
We can still make this work, Douglas. We can be happy together as king and queen, as husband and wife.
We're really very well suited. We have a lot in common. We work well together. It doesn't matter that you don't love me.
I do care for you in my way. You're a strong man, brave and true, with a good heart. Trust me, you don't meet many like that in show business. We'll make a good partnership. And I want to be queen. It's what I've always wanted. And you'll make an excellent king. It doesn't matter that you don't love me.
But I do. I do love you, Jessamine. That's the problem.
Oh, God, Douglas. I didn't know. This is going to complicate the hell out of things, isn't it?
Probably. I love you, Jess. And Lewis is my best friend. Do you see now why...
Of course. Yes. No wonder you... How long have...
I've loved you from the first moment I met you. I just looked at you and knew that you were the one. The woman I'd been waiting all my life to meet. The only woman I ever wanted to... give my heart to.
Oh, Jesus. Douglas, are you saying you never loved anyone before me? Surely there must have been other women in your life before me. I mean, you were a paragon, a prince, the Empire's most eligible bachelor, I saw you on the gossip shows with girls on your arm.
Oh, yes. There were always girls. Pretty girls, even beautiful girls. It's amazing how attractive being the only heir to the imperial throne can make a man. Some mothers did everything but smuggle their daughters into my bedchamber. And there have always been women desperate to bed a paragon. Any paragon. They even chased after Louis, bless his ugly face, though he was always more particular than me. I never had to go to bed alone unless I wanted to. Some of them I even liked. But none of them ever meant anything. I never loved any of them because I could never be sure any of them loved me. Loved the man and not the paragon, the prince. You must know what I'm talking about. You're a star, a diva. Have you ever been in love, Jess?
Oh, darling, I'm famous for it. 6 marriages, twice as many official partners, and more lovers than I feel comfortable remembering. I never had to deny myself anything, so I never did. And it can get really lonely on the road, travelling from one theatre to the next. I was a real tart in my younger days, falling in love with every pretty face or nice tight little ass that came along. I was fond of them all at the time, but I can't honestly say any of them ever meant anything to me. None of them ever mattered. There's never been anyone in my life as important to me as me. God, that makes me sound so shallow. Douglas, you're a very impressive man. I'm just a star. You're a legend. You deserve someone better than me.
I don't think I could stand to meet anyone more impressive than you.
Douglas finally lifted his eyes to meet hers, and each of them saw compassion in the other.
I guess we're stuck with each other, Jess. We're going to be king and queen. We should be proud.
Yes, we should. It's a great honor.
It doesn't matter that you don't love me.
Oh, Douglas.
Why Louis, Jess? Why him?
Oh, hell, I don't know. Perhaps because he's so unimpressed with who and what I am. Because he's brave and honorable. Because you always want what you know you can't have. It doesn't matter. It's over. Time to move on.
I have to be able to trust you, Jess.
You can, Douglas.
Louis is a fine man.
Yes, he is.
I was always proud to call him my friend. But I think everything will be better once he's gone.
Douglas rose to his feet, crossed over to the dressing room table, picked up the crown, and put it on his head. He looked briefly into the mirror, his face calm and empty. And then he turned his back on what he saw. He walked over to the door, opened it, and then paused there to look back at Jessamine.
I'm giving up my only real friend to marry you, Jess. Don't ever let me regret it.
Louis Deathstalker sat alone in the only chair in his empty apartment, staring straight ahead of him, not really thinking about anything, waiting for it to be dinner time so he could eat a meal he didn't want. The room was silent, still, with nothing to look at or distract him. Even the walls were bare. The few belongings he'd brought with him were mostly still packed in a crate in the next room, along with the mattress that served as a bed. Louis stared at an empty wall, not thinking, only feeling. When the time came and he'd eaten as much of his dinner as he could, he'd drop the disposable plates into the atomizer, go back to his chair, and sit and wait for it to be late enough for him to go to bed, so he could escape into sleep and leave his life behind for a while.
How can everything have gone so wrong so quickly?
He didn't have much to do as champion anymore. Douglas had seen to that. Anne had called in the king's name to tell Louis his presence as champion was no longer required at the house, and it seemed all his other duties had been suspended. So all that was left was to sit in his chair and sometimes think about just how badly he'd screwed up his life. All the things he once took for granted, all the things he used to live for, all the honorable underpinnings of his existence had been swept away, and he didn't know what to do anymore. He had betrayed his best and truest friend. Not physically, perhaps, but in his heart. He loved Jessamine Flowers, the woman, not the star. But she was going to be Douglas's bride and queen to the Empire. and even to love her in silence and from a distance was a kind of treason. He'd never thought love, when it finally came along, would be like this. A pain he couldn't bear, a need he couldn't ease, a woman he couldn't have. Dishonor and disgrace. But then, that was Deathstalker luck for you. Always bad. Ask Owen. Ask Hazel. Wherever they were. He looked slowly around his room for something to do, something to interest him, for a while at least, so he wouldn't have to think or feel. He supposed he could go and unpack his belongings, but he couldn't seem to work up the energy. It wasn't as if there were anything important in the crate. He'd never been one to collect things, never had the time or the interest. His work was his life, or at least it used to be. His eyes drifted on across the empty room, and he wondered how he could have lived so long and still have so little to show for it. His gaze finally settled on his computer terminal and monitor, sitting on the floor by the single polarized window. He supposed he should check to see if there were any messages. It wouldn't be anything important. Anything that mattered would come through his comm implant. But there might be something. Something to occupy him. He rose slowly, tiredly from his chair, like an old man, and walked over to squat down on the floor before the terminal. He hit the message function, and the screen lit up. Just the one message today, from the fan who ran his tribute site. Lewis frowned. Tim Highbury didn't usually bother him directly unless it was something important. Maybe he'd tracked down some new bootleg operation, making money off Lewis's name and reputation. Lewis always shut them down. He took his good name seriously. Besides, the last set of knockoff action figures had looked nothing like him. He made the connection, called Tim's private number, and the monitor screen immediately cleared to show the face of his truest fan and supporter. It was a young face, barely out of his teens, but Tim had been running the tribute site with frightening enthusiasm and efficiency ever since he was 14. Lewis smiled at him. It was good to know there were still some things he could depend on.
Hello, Tim. Good to hear from you. What's up? Running short of funds at last?
No, it's not that. It's not the money, Lewis. It was never about the money. You know that. But I'm afraid I'm going to have to shut down the site. Your site. In fact, it's already done. I'm sorry.
Lewis just stared at him, lost for words. He wasn't sure how he felt about no longer having his own tribute site. On the one hand, he'd never been entirely comfortable with having a site at all. It encouraged too much of the fannish adoration he'd always found so embarrassing. But on the other hand, if there was one person he'd thought he'd always be able to rely on, it was Tim Highbury. Tim had always believed in him, understood him, stood between Lewis and the obsessives who would otherwise have made his life a misery. Before Tim had come along, Lewis had had to employ a screening system for his calls and change his address every 6 months to be sure of getting some privacy. And now, there was something odd about the way Tim was acting. He looked not so much upset as disappointed.
What is it, Tim? What's happened? Has someone been putting pressure on you over the site?
No, it's not that. Well, not exactly. It's just... It isn't the same anymore. People just don't feel the same way about you. Not since the Neumann riot. It's all changed. It isn't fun anymore. I'm sure you'll find someone else to take over the site. Run it for you. For people who still believe in you. I'm sorry. I can't do it anymore. I have to go now. Goodbye.
Lewis stared at the blank screen, almost in shock, and then shut down his screen. Tim had given up on him. His oldest, truest fan. Lewis hadn't thought it would be possible to feel more alone, more isolated and abandoned. But in this, as in so many other things, he had been wrong. He got up and slowly walked back to his chair. His legs were unsteady, and he all but collapsed into the chair as he sat down again. Was it just the riot? Or could word about him and Jess already be circulating? No,
It couldn't be that. Even a hint of such gossip would have had his place surrounded by journalists by now, baying for a statement. Could Douglas have simply put out the word that Lewis was now officially persona non grata? It wouldn't have been like Douglas, but then he'd never been betrayed so badly before. But no. Again, that kind of rift between two such important people would have been meat and drink to the gossip shows. So why had Tim abandoned him? Lewis sat up sharply.
Hello, Lewis. Sorry to bother you, but I have a job that needs doing.
Hello, Douglas. Don't worry. You didn't interrupt anything important. What can I do for you?
I need you to go over to the court and check on how preparations for the wedding are going. They're way behind schedule, and I can't get a straight answer out of anybody as to why. I can't spare the time to go over and yell at them myself, so I want you to do it for me. Feel free to kick whatever asses you consider necessary to get them up to speed again. Talk to you later, Lewis. Bye.
And that was it. Lewis chewed the words over slowly, not sure he liked the taste or what it signified. His first thought was that this was just make-work, something to keep him busy, and a safe distance away from the house, and Douglas, and Jessamine. Anyone could have coped with such a simple problem. Hell, Anne could have sorted it out on her lunch hour. And asking him to ensure that the royal wedding ran smoothly could be seen as rubbing his nose in it, except that that would have been petty. Douglas was many things, but petty had never been one of them. So was there something important, significant, happening at the court right now that Douglas needed Lewis to investigate? Something Douglas couldn't afford to notice officially. Some threat, some dispute, some underhandedness that Douglas couldn't discuss openly? God knew there were enough groups and individuals who'd seize on any chance of disrupting the wedding. Lewis remembered the suicide bomber at the house, considered how much damage a transmutation bomb could do at the wedding, and shuddered despite himself. Only one way to find out what was going on at court. Go and see. So he went. He was actually feeling pretty good by the time he got to court. Good to be doing something again, something that mattered. The court itself was full of people running back and forth on urgent errands, all of them apparently far too busy to stop and talk with him. Lewis strolled slowly around the great hall, getting the feel of things, looking and listening and saying nothing, while everyone else gave him plenty of room, without actually acknowledging his presence or very existence. It soon became clear to him that while there was a lot of shouting and waving of arms going on, not to mention a hell of a lot of bad language, nothing much was actually getting done, because no one could agree on what needed doing first. Everyone had their own agenda and deadline, and no one was prepared to back down for anyone else. Projects were left unfinished or only half done, because some other section leader would come along and commandeer the workforce for their own half-done or unfinished project. Lewis metaphorically rolled his sleeves up and got stuck in. When in doubt, go to the top. Lewis searched out each section leader in turn and talked politely and earnestly. When that didn't work, he grabbed two handfuls of their shirt fronts, slammed them up against the nearest wall, and glared at them. He explained how much better it would be for everyone if they stopped arguing and fighting with each other and started to behave in a civilized and cooperative manner. And everyone he talked to nodded eagerly and didn't stop nodding until he took his hand off his sword hilt, or in extreme cases, their throats. Lewis then assembled all the section heads together in one place and explained how unhappy the king was with their lack of progress, and how unhappy that made him. He went on to explain that if they couldn't or wouldn't do their job and get things running smoothly and back on schedule in very short order, he would personally see that they were all buried in one big communal grave, probably but not necessarily after they were dead, and see how their seconds in command did as section leaders. Everyone agreed to be much more civilized in future and send the king's office regular progress reports to prove it. And Lewis sent them all back to work with smiles and encouraging words, a promise of a substantial bonus if they came in on time and under budget, and a good kick up the arse to help the slowest moving on his way. And that should have been that. Except, Lewis couldn't get over how frightened of him they'd all been. All right, he'd played his part to the hilt, complete with menacing stare and heavy breathing, because they wouldn't have taken him seriously if he hadn't, and he'd been quite prepared to slap a few heads if that was what it took to get their attention. But some of them had started sweating the moment they recognized him. Some of them looked like they would have run away if they dared. If he hadn't known better, Lewis would have sworn they were actually taking his threats seriously. That they really believed he would kill them, if they didn't do what he said, which was disturbing. Louis took up a position on the raised dais beside the king's throne and looked out over the court again. There was a lot less shouting and carrying on going on now, and rather more constructive effort, but no one wanted to look at him. In fact, people were going out of their way to avoid even having to come close to the dais. Louis was honestly baffled by this. He was used to respect. He'd felt he'd earned that in his years as Paragon and the King's Justice. But this wasn't respect. It was fear. They were acting like some wild animal had come into their midst, one that might go mad and attack them all at any moment. Louis looked around until he spotted a journalist. Louis stepped down from the dais and headed casually towards him. People scattered to get out of Louis's way.
Almost with relief, the royal court has stepped up their efforts to...
The journalist looked around sharply, took one look at Louis bearing down on him...
Oh no.
...and headed straight for the nearest exit, his camera bobbing along behind him. Louis increased his pace. The journalist glanced back over his shoulder.
Oh shit.
He broke into a run. Louis drew the thin throwing dagger from the top of his boot, took careful aim, and let fly. The knife caught the journalist's flowing sleeve and pinned it firmly to the wall.
Shit, let go of my... Oh, Sir Deathstalker, Sir Champion, wonderful to see you. Looking good, yes. Aren't we having absolutely marvelous weather?
Why did you run?
Urgent story, just breaking. You know how it is. Very important story and significant, and I really must be going. Can't stop. Sorry.
Stand still. You're not going anywhere until you and I have had a friendly and informative little heart-to-heart. What's your name, and who do you work for?
Adrian Prank, Sir Deathstalker. Channel 437, news and views and everything that moves. If it matters, we're there. Look, I really must be...
No, you mustn't. Talk to me, Adrian Prank. Talk to me openly and honestly, or I will bounce your head off that wall until your eyes change color. Why are you so scared of me?
Are you kidding? After what you did at the Neumann riot, everyone's shit scared of you.
Louis looked at Prank for a long moment.
I did my duty.
You killed people, lots of people. Cut them down and butchered them right in front of the cameras and looked like you were enjoying every minute of it. That wasn't duty. It wasn't even law. It was retaliation.
Paragons had been murdered. I was avenging my fallen comrades.
Paragons are supposed to be about justice. Not vengeance. We all saw it, Deathstalker. You went after the people who killed your friends, and you cut down everyone who got in your way, whether they were guilty of anything or not. And you smiled while you did it. There was other people's blood on your face, and you smiled. We've been running coverage of what you did in the riot pretty much nonstop ever since. Not just 437, all the news channels. No one could believe what you did, that you could be so vicious, so out of control. The famed Deathstalker rage turned on civilians. No one trusts you anymore. What's the matter, Deathstalker? You said you wanted the truth. Don't you have the stomach for it?
I didn't kill anyone who wasn't trying to kill me.
We all saw, Deathstalker. We all saw what you did. We all saw the real you.
Louis jerked the dagger out of Prank's sleeve and out of the wall. Louis put the dagger back in the top of his boot and stepped away from the journalist.
Thank you, Adrian. You can go now.
Prank looked at him dubiously.
What? You mean it? You're not going to kill me?
No, Adrian. I'm not going to kill you.
Oh, good. Then, if you'll excuse me, there is a toilet calling my name really loudly.
He edged sideways across the wall until he was safely out of Louis's reach, and then he turned and ran for the exit, his camera chasing after him. He didn't look back, as though afraid Louis might change his mind and come after him, or shoot him in the back. Louis watched him go, and then turned slowly to look out over the court again. It had all gone very quiet. Everyone was watching him. As Louis looked back at them, they all avoided his gaze and went about their business again. The general noise and hubbub slowly resumed, but nowhere near as loud or as lively as before. Lewis leaned back against the wall, suddenly tired. He scowled, his ugly face uglier than usual. This was why Douglas had sent him to the court, what Douglas had wanted him to see, to know. To learn the truth that Douglas hadn't been able to bring himself to say in person. That everyone was scared of Lewis Deathstalker now. That no one trusted him anymore. Not because of Jessamine, but because of what he'd done. What he'd let himself do in his rage during the Neumann riot. They all thought he was a monster. And perhaps they were right. No wonder Tim Highbury didn't want to run his site anymore. He wasn't just a monster. He was a pariah. That was what Douglas had sent him here to learn. One last gift from an old friend? Or one more twist of the knife from a new enemy? Lewis Deathstalker strode out of the court, head held high, and everyone there was glad to see him go.